Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It's 8 o'clock. This is The Writer's Block. It's a Thursday night, and this is LA Talk Radio. I'm Jim Christina, and I'm here in the studio tonight with the lovely and charming Bobby Jean Bell. Bobby G. G. Bobby Joe Bell. Bobby J. Her. And in studio with us tonight is Margaret Brownlee, and a wonderful writer, and been a friend for years. And accompanying Margaret tonight is her her husband, George. And, of course, Jim Bell is back over there holding up the wall.
He takes pictures.
That's right. He's our official photographer. Bobby.
Yes.
We missed you last week.
I know, and the show was great. I enjoyed listening to you and Russ talking with Joyce, and it was a wonderful show. That's the beauty of a podcast.
Yes.
You really don't miss it.
Absolutely. So how did your concert series go?
Terrific. We had Susie Glaze and the High Lonesome Band. They're just an awesome local kind of newgrass, bluegrass, acoustic, fabulous quintet. And it's part of our ongoing SCV-TV Presents the Out West Concert Series, now in its seventh year, I think. And they are held the fourth Thursday of every month in Newhall.
That's when we lose you.
That's when I can't be cloned. I've been trying to figure out how to do that, be two places at one time.
We have Russ.
Yes, and it was a great show. So I get to be with you 3 weeks, and then I go host a concert. The same time that you're hosting LA Talk and Writer's Block.
Well, just know that we always miss you.
Well, thank you, Jim.
Oh, you're welcome. Now that we're done with the kiss-up, why don't you tell us a little bit about Margaret Brownlee?
I would love to. Margaret Brownlee is here in the studio with us, as you said, one of our favorites. I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. Margaret Brownlee is a New York Times best-selling author and past Romance Writers of America, RITA, that's R-I-T-A, finalist, with 40 books to her credit, including her new release, Undercover Bride, which I began reading last night in the late hours of the evening, which is book two of her new series, Undercover Ladies, and it features female Pinkerton detectives in the Old West. And Margaret's fans know her taglines, Love and Laughter in the Old West and How the West Was Fun, and enjoy her website and e-newsletters as much as her books. She is meticulous research, uncovers all kinds of fun facts, and we're going to be talking a little bit later about the glossary of mail order bride advertising. She's also written for a CBS daytime soap. Not bad for someone who flunked eighth grade English, but she says, don't ask me to diagram a sentence. For the past 6 years, Margaret has been an enthusiastic participant in our store Out West's Rendezvous with a Writer series, appearing with book signings, panel discussions, part of a library grand opening, and our annual Buckaroo Bookshop during the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival. Please welcome to the Writer's Block our good friend, author Margaret Brownlee. Hey, Margaret.
Well, hi. How are you? Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here, and I love the Writer's Block. It's a lot of fun, and it's been great just hearing the two programs you've had so far.
Well, we're making history, right, Jim?
We are. We are. It's taken us a year and a half to get this far, so.
Oh, well, you're doing a great job.
Oh, thank you so much.
So you have a new series out, and you've written a number of series, and as we've said, about 40 books. Tell us about the newest book, which was just released June 1st.
Yes, it was.
Tell us about Undercover Bride.
Yes. Well, of course, as you said, she's a Pinkerton detective, and she has traveled to Arizona Territory to as an undercover bride. Her fiancé is suspected of being the gunny sack robbery. I have to remember which one it was. Anyway, she has to find the money that he stole and prove that he's guilty before the wedding.
Yeah.
The clock is ticking.
He's an interesting fellow. Garrett Thomas is his name in this book, right? I love to ask this question of all creative folks, authors, artists, songwriters. What inspires you?
Well, it's a different thing for each book. And one of the things that inspires me is the deadline. if you've got a deadline, you're inspired, right? But anyway, in this particular case, I read a book about Kate Warren, who was the first Pinkerton detective, female detective, and I was just astounded to find out that in 1856 she was hired by Ellen Pinkerton, the first female detective in the world, I think. Anyway, I just thought that was so amazing because I'd never heard about that before, and he thought she wanted to be a secretary, but she soon set him straight about that. Would you have loved to have been at that meeting? Oh, absolutely. Anyway, he soon found out that a woman can go where angels and men fear to tread, basically. And, she can become friends with the wives and the girlfriends of the outlaws and get all kinds of information. What I found was so fascinating is I never have been able to find out much about her. Her biography is about, maybe 30 pages long. That's all they know about her. We think she was a widow. That's what she said she was. She was only in her 20s. And what kept me up at night is, why would she want to be a detective? I mean, in the 1850s. Mm-hmm. So that was what got me thinking and inspired.
Now, this is part of a series. So there was a book one. This is book two.
Right.
Can you share a little bit or can you tell us a little bit about what's coming in this particular series?
Oh, well, book three is out in December, and it's called Calico Spy. And she's going to be working undercover as a Harvey girl.
And food. There'll be good food recipes in this book.
Somebody is killing off the Harvey girls, and it's her job to find out who it is before he kills her or before she burns down the restaurant. So that's what that's about.
Does each of the books have returning, the detective, is it the same woman in every book, or
no.
Do we have different?
No, it's, in fact, this is a romance, so of course she's going to find true love in each book, right? So no, in fact, the books don't have to be read in order because they all stand alone.
Yeah. Jim, I know you're dying to ask Margaret at least a couple questions.
I have more than a couple.
Jump right in here.
When you're doing your research, what's the most surprising thing that you find out?
Well, I just finished another book, another series, and one of the most surprising things that I just found out very recently was that, I heard about the snake oil doctors that used to go around in the Old West, but I didn't know about the rain doctors that used to go around in the Old West. And surprisingly enough, during the Civil War, 169 of their major battles were followed by torrential rains. And Napoleon actually was the first one to notice that. And so the theory was that with all the cannons and everything is what caused the rain to come. So I think we should be doing this in California for sure, getting the cannons going.
Firing cannons.
That's exactly
not a
right.
bad
but
idea.
Isn't that fascinating? And I had that theory, though, before I even knew about this because I used to be a teacher. And every time it was cloudy and you let the children out, they would pound, their feet, and it would start raining. And I was convinced that it was their pounding feet. So those Native Americans had the right idea with their rain dances.
Well, they used to shoot pellets or something into the air, and they'd do the pound of drums and beat the stuff. And
well, anyway, the Civil War, apparently they knew what they were doing. But anyway, I thought that was fascinating.
I think you left that as a little tidbit on Facebook today, that you had a great idea for taking a Civil War trick and getting the drought taken care of here in California.
Right. Well, sometimes those old ideas, work.
Okay, first, big question for the night. When did you write your first book, and what prompted you to do it?
Okay, I wrote my first book in fifth grade, so, and it was a mystery, which I didn't know how to end, about 30 pages long, which was a book for third grade.
Of course, handwritten.
Oh, yes, handwritten, and I so that was my first book. And I really wanted to be a writer all my life. I've wanted to be a writer. I was always a storyteller, and in as much as, you know, I always loved to tell stories and find different things out. But I was in eighth grade. I really did funk eighth grade English. And my English teacher said, don't even think about being a writer, which kind of crushed me at the time, you know. But anyway, and I kind of thought, well, okay, I guess I can't be a writer. But every year during my teens, I entered the 17 magazine contest. They always had a writing contest, never won, never placed. And then, you know, I got busy, and as you do, marriage, children, all of that, school. And but when my children made into junior high and that, I thought, you know what, I'm going to do what I always wanted to do. I'm going to write, and I did. And I wrote four books. I said, I'll give myself 5 years to make it. I wrote four books in 5 years, probably the worst book that was written. Anyway, and at the end of 5 years, I thought, okay, I'll give myself another 5 years. You know? And so when I finally sold a book.
And here we are.
Here we are.
So. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask just how long does it typically take you to write one novel?
A novel. Well, now it takes me about 6 months, 6 to 9 months, depending. You know, it's a little faster on these because I did most of the research for the first one. So it depends how much research I have. You know, the one I just finished for another series took a lot of research because before 1883, there was no standard time in the United States. And if you were traveling from New York to California, you would pass 100 time zones. And which was not a problem when you were traveling by covered wagon, but when the trains came in, that was a major problem. And I was able to research and found more than 100 train accidents on the East Coast alone because of the time confusion. Trains would leave too late or early and everything. So the interesting part about it is that the jeweler in the town would usually be the one who decided what time. That was okay, except that sometimes there would be more than one jeweler. And one Kansas town had seven, and nobody knew what time it was. So anyway.
100 time zones, that's a lot of watch winding.
I know. I'm trying to imagine.
What time is it? It's 8. Nope, turn 9.
Well, you know, during the Civil War, this was a problem because, for many reasons, most of the farmers, they never had a clock or watch. You know, the animals and the sun told the time. And so if Washington said, you know, attack at such and such, well, what time is that, you know? So they all decided to attack at dawn so everybody could read what dawn was.
That's fascinating. Now, you say 1883
yeah.
is when
well, then it was
begins
the railroad.
To be standard. Okay,
the railroad
so,
finally decided that something had to be done, and they came up with the four time zones. So at the first, they went to Congress in 1808 with saying, we need to change times, but, you know, Congress wasn't going to do anything. Took the railroad.
Much like today.
Yeah,
that was
exactly
in 1808. Sure. Congress didn't do anything.
So anyway, my story takes place in two-time Texas, so now you know.
There you go.
And that's a new part of a new series.
Yes, that's coming up.
And what series is that called?
It's going to be called Hope Chest Brides. Yeah.
Now, you do write in series.
For
anthologies.
Well, except reason, publishers like three book series. I don't know why. They say after that, readers get kind of lose interest or whatever. They go on to something else. So three seems to be the magic number.
Ah,
yeah,
so
that's
three.
Not my choices. Okay. Yes.
And, but although it took you 6 months to research and write, you seem to be more prolific than, say, two books a year then. So
Well, I have 6 books coming out from June 1st to December of this year, but, you know.
That sounds like she's in a different time zone or calendar or something.
She's in, like, the last 5.
But, you know, that's not unusual in my field of romance writers. You know, Nora Roberts has more than 200 books out. I mean, that it's not unusual in our field for some reason. I don't know why. That's so interesting.
Do you write more than one book at a time?
I do in a series because I don't, because I, it has, in this particular series, not this one, but the next one that I'm doing, I have to be careful because it's 3 sisters. And so I have to make sure, you know, that the stories are all right, the same people are doing what, and, you know, all that.
Oh, wow.
But otherwise, no, I usually just do one book at a time.
And so are you already planning, you know, what's coming after this 3 books of this next series? Like, how far in advance are you already?
Yes. Well, I have an idea. I haven't done anything with it, but I do have an idea. So usually when I get to the 2nd book, starting the 3rd, that's when I'll sit down and put together a new idea for the publisher.
It's amazing. Yeah. And you have a publisher. Is the same publisher for all of your books?
No, it's a different publisher. Yeah.
Now, in this time of publisher, self-publisher and such, can you give us a little bit of, let's say we're a new author. We have our first book written. What would be some great advice on how to get that book out there?
Well, you know, this is an interesting question, and you're probably asking the wrong person because...
Well, you found a publisher. I mean, how did you go about finding your first publisher?
Well, the thing is, I wrote, like I said, 4 books before I published. But you know what? It took me that long to find my voice. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I'm glad now that my first book wasn't published, actually, you know, because it would take me a long time to live that one down.
So, I think we've all had one of those.
But you know, it just takes a while. And I if you're going to self-publish, I hope that people would care about their book enough to get themselves an editor because, mm-hmm. You know, I would never publish a book without an editor. You just need, you know, that. And I think some people are just publishing too quickly today. They're not taking the time. They're not going through the whole process, mm-hmm. you know, and I think it's important. I really do.
Now, your husband, George, is here with us. We don't have him on mic, but is he your sounding board? Do you, you know, read things aloud to him or... Does he read things as you go? Or?
Well, here's the thing, okay? You know, if I read something to him out loud and he liked it, I think he would be honest with me. And then if he didn't like it, I'd be mad. So it's better that for our marriage that I don't.
Now, Jim, you're an author.
Yeah.
And your wife, Jerry, is very involved in what you do.
Yes, she is.
Does she read your work as you're going?
Yeah, she does.
And she give you good... feedback?
She does. She gives me really good feedback. As a matter of fact, she's known as the comma queen. She says, this requires a comma.
Well, they don't put as many commas in anymore as they used to, though.
No, they don't. But you know what? There are so many words that can either be capitalized or left in a lowercase.
That's right.
And so I get that question all the time. Well, if you're calling him the deacon, is the capitalized? Well, yeah, if that's his name.
Yeah.
But if it's just the deacon went, then no, it's not. No. And I get that mistake all the time.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's tricky. But I have a good editor, and I have a good copy editor, so I don't sweat those things anymore. I used to.
Well, I don't like it when they change my dialogue.
Oh.
Because people talk differently, and, you know, it's just like nobody says, I'm going to the store. Everybody says, I'm going to the store.
Yes.
I say I'm going to the store.
Well, that's because that's you, Bobby Jean. And
so if you write dialogue for me, it would be okay to say it that way.
We'll punctuate it with a lot of commas.
And every publisher is different. Mm-hmm. They all use a different style of book. So, you know, it's just one of those things.
You had mentioned when we were waiting to come into the studio that, Bobby Jean actually had mentioned it, that you start some of your books with a reference to Scripture, and that you don't always, you possibly may use a quote from somebody, but are all your books started that way?
With a quote? Well, let's see.
Or with Scripture?
not all, but I think most are. Just it's basically for myself, just to, you know, this is what my theme was, right? It just kind of helps me to know that I have a good, strong theme and carried it all the way through. Yeah, mm-hmm. So.
Now, I know when I did The Dark Angel, I started that book with a quote from Corinthians. Mm-hmm. And it worked out really well. And then you put a quote in when you did your foreword.
Yes, I did.
In fact, if anybody out there has read The Dark Angel, all three of you, Bobby Jean wrote the foreword to that book. Did a wonderful job, incidentally.
That was a real gripping page-turner book. But we'll interview you about that book in the future, because I think that our listeners would want to know about Jim Christina, the author.
Oh.
And the series that he writes.
Okay.
This listener wants to know.
Yes, yes. Hey, what's the phone number, Jim, for people to call in and talk to Margaret?
If people want to call in and talk to Margaret Brownlee, the number here is 818-602-4929. It is 818-602-4929, and you can call in right now and talk to Margaret Brownlee in person.
Say it one more time.
818-602-4929. 602-4929.
Yes, we want the. You also write some really wonderful stories that are centered around the mail order bride, and of course, we also know that's part of the premise here too for the undercover bride book that was just released. And one of the things that you have right now posted on your website are some of the glossary terms. You know, if you were advertising to be a bride. Some of the terminology that you might put in your ad, and they are just too fun. Can I share them?
Oh, absolutely, because I was on her website this morning, and I read them, and I was cracking up in my office.
So let's see. Eager to learn. That means, do you remember what that means?
No, you'll have to tell me.
Well, here, we'll share this, because everybody doesn't want to hear my voice on all these. Eager to learn means?
Can't cook, can't sew, and can't clean.
Accomplished.
Can ride, shoot, and spit like a man.
That would be me. No, not.
Because you're going to the store.
Modest dowry.
Poor as a church mouse.
I like this one. Loving nature.
Keep her away from the ranch hands. Yep.
Traditionally built.
You may wish to reinforce the floor.
Matrimonially inclined.
Working on husband number three.
Maternal.
Has six children and one on the way.
I love that. Possesses natural beauty.
Don't be fooled by the false hair, cosmetic paint, what is that, paints, or bolstered bosoms.
And the last one, industrious.
Give her a dollar and she'll figure out how to spend 10.
I love it.
So if you're reading any mail order bride ads out there, you know, be warned. Or if you can't remember, just go to, what's your web? Margaret?
Margaret-Brownlee.com.
Right. And then you can pick these glossary words right up there. So you'll know what you're getting.
Speaking of mail order brides, that was really big back in the 1800s.
It was. It was especially after the Civil War, mm-hmm. because there were some towns in the South that had very few men. You know, they were widows, and very few men came back. And so what do? You know, so some of them, they started all these catalogs, and they were putting ads in. They made a lot of money on those catalogs, and this is how they did it. The interesting part about it was that the mail order bride, they used to write a Sears catalog, asking for a bride, and the last one to do that was actually in the Vietnam War. There was actually a soldier that wrote to Sears catalog asking for a bride.
It's so. Really interesting.
He was in Vietnam. He could have found one anywhere.
Well, really I suppose it could, but
was Sears part? I mean, did they
no,
have a mail?
No, no, no.
So
no,
they were
they
not part.
They got right. Everything else from the catalog. Sears, why not a bride, right?
Well, and there's an anthology that you. Contributed a story for that was called Marriage for All Seasons, I think, was
yes,
the anthology.
Bride
for All Seasons. And your story was the first one in that anthology, which was spring, I think, was the theme.
Right.
And you talk, they're so well written. But The Hitching Post is the mail order catalog.
Right.
And there's a gentleman that's the editor. And what does he do?
Well, he takes the ads that people what a place in his catalog, but he looks at them because, you know, back then a lot of those people were very honest. If they were fat, she would say she was fat, or, you know, that they were very, they didn't know how to market themselves. So he would make certain changes, but some of the changes could be quite disastrous. You know, for example, he might forget to mention that, you know, he has a son, or that she has, you know, certain qualifications. So he changes. So they never got what they thought they were getting, and it was kind of fun.
They're very, very, very fun stories, and it's great. I just thought Hitching Post, that was such a clever name. Now, that was not an actual name of a...
No, I made that up.
Yeah. And all four writers, how did you, because you all use that premise in each of the stories, and there are four different writers.
Right.
So what was that collaboration process like?
Well, it was actually our agent that put the four of us together. She thought it'd be fun that we put it together. We got on the phone, we did some zipped things, and it just so happened that I had that idea somewhere in my computer. I says, what do you think about such and such? And everybody said, yeah, let's do that. So it was fun, different writing with other people, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Now, are there more? Can we look forward to more of those?
Yes, well, we had, of course, we did a second one, which was Four Weddings and a Kiss, the same four of us. We did that one. And then, of course, now I'm in 12 Brides, so I'm working with 12 authors. So,
and when does that one come out?
Well, let's see. I think that one comes out in September.
Wow. We have to have Margaret back. We should already know, put her for September.
There's not enough time in a week to talk about everything she's doing.
Let's see. You already asked her how long it takes to write a book, right?
I want the block question.
Okay, good. You take that one.
Margaret, have you ever had writer's block?
Oh, dear.
And?
You know.
And how did you get out of it?
Okay, yes. But I do want to tell you something. I used to teach creative writing. And several people would come, and they'd have a novel that they started and couldn't finish. And strangely enough, after a while, I noticed that when they got stuck, it was always around page 50. And I thought that was kind of strange, you know. I mean, 50, 55. And I thought, there's got to be a reason why people get bogged down at that thing. So I thought and thought and thought about it. Then it occurred to me that that's when you know your characters, and that sometimes the name isn't right. So I said to them, why don't you try changing the name to what you think the character would benefit your character? And that seemed to solve the problem. And I had the same problem with my own book, because my heroine had too feminine of a name, and she was a tomboy, and it just didn't fit. So I changed her name, and that really helped. So that's kind of an interesting thing. But if I get stuck and it's not going smoothly, I think it's the subconscious that is telling.
We have a call, ladies.
Caller, yay!
Hi, you're on the writer's block. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, this is Leah.
This is who?
Leah, calling in.
Hi! Welcome!
I just called in to listen. Is it almost over?
No. About 20 minutes.
Okay, well, I just called in to listen to see what.
Well, you can catch us on LA Talk. You can catch us on latalkradio.com.
Oh, okay.
And just forward slash writer's block and just go listen live.
All right. Okay. All right.
That work for you?
Thanks. Yeah.
Okay, then.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for the call.
Right. Thank you for calling.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All righty, then.
Well, anyway, I was saying, so if I have problems, I just keep going. I think it's the subconscious telling you that there's something not right. Something is wrong. So I just go back to the beginning and keep going back and back until I finally get it. You know, I made a wrong turn somewhere. So usually that is how I work. I just have to write it out. You just have to keep going, you know. But I think everybody goes through that.
Everybody does, yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, and it just makes you, I think sometimes it just makes you dig a little deeper. So maybe it's good for the book. I don't know.
Or maybe you took a wrong turn where you shouldn't have.
That's exactly what,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes you're writing a scene and then you think, oh dear, you know, I don't know how to respond to this, you know, so something isn't right. You have to go back.
So when you set about writing and you have the idea and you have the characters, you've done the research, you have a premise in mind, do you already know how it's going to end?
No.
No. So it's evolving as you're...
Well, in a romance, you always know the couple's going to be together because the readers demand a happy ending. So you know that. But how they get together, I never know. I just don't. That's what keeps me up at night.
And that's why we read late at night.
That's right.
Well, we're going to give Margaret a little break here, and we'll be back in about 20, 25 seconds.
I took one sip of water. Like what?
I'm up at 3. I know the drill.
But you were up at 1 o'clock, didn't you?
Oh, gosh. I'm up till like 1, 2, 3 o'clock.
I know, because you put something on Facebook, and I think I saw at 1 o'clock. I forgot what she did at Walmart.
It's terrible. And I was going to try to put something on Facebook right now.
And we're back at LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. We're here with Margaret Brownlee. And if you'd like to talk to Margaret, the number here is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. And if you're listening and you want to call in, that's the number. Okay. We're back.
We're back with Margaret Brownlee.
Just like to mention briefly, too, that next Thursday is going to be a lot of fun because we have Eric Keisner and Al Bringas coming in. And Eric just finished a book called West to Bravo, and Al illustrated the whole thing. So they're going to be sitting in studio, and those guys are cut up, so this should be a fun night.
That'll be fun. And Eric has just come back from the opening of the John Wayne Birthplace Museum.
Yes, we've seen pictures of his travels all across the country.
Yes, we have. And you can follow us on Facebook, by the way. We do have a Facebook page for the Writer's Block Radio Show. And we'd love to have you file any comments or posts or tell us if you're a writer, what you're working on. If you're a blogger, you know, post what your blog is. We definitely want to be reaching out to writers of all types, genres, biographies, editors, publishers,
music,
literary agents, songwriters.
Absolutely.
If you work with the written word in any way, shape, or form, we would really love to hear from you and have you be part of the forum of the Writer's Block radio show.
Yeah, and not so much every language, but ones that we actually can understand.
Let's see. Jim, I'm sure you have a question for Margaret.
I do. Your stories are like set in the Old West. What made you pick that period of time?
It's interesting. You know, I was kind of came of age, you know, during when all the Westerns were on TV, watching those old movies and that. And I always just loved that period. And when I was, I started writing actually contemporary. But my voice, for some reason, is better for historical. It's kind of strange, isn't it? but anyway, I just loved that period of time, not just because of the cowboys, which of course is a big draw, but also because I thought it was an exciting time for women. You know, they got rid of all their fancy clothes from the East and all that banners and all the stuff that was required of them, and they came out. I just thought it was fascinating that they would go West and just become somebody else, and they didn't even know probably that they could become. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was an exciting time for women.
I think a lot of them actually did become somebody else.
Well,
you know, leave your identity behind and become whoever you wanted to become.
Well, that's it, you know. And women, they were doing so many wonderful things. You know, they started newspapers, they were teachers, they were just doing fantastic things. And they owned land. A lot of people don't realize how much that women were doing back then. And I just thought it was fascinating. Yeah. So that just kind of where my heart went.
When you're researching and you're digging really deep into a subject matter, do you find yourself, and I'm a clicking reader. I mean, I'll be reading some stuff I'm researching and I'll see a link. So I click and go read there, and then I go someplace else, and pretty soon I forgot where I was originally, and then I have to go back. But I get as deeply into the research as I can, and I'm going to assume that you do as well.
Well, I do. I like books. I have a tremendous library. I mean, I've given up on the shelves. They're now coming up on the floor. But I love the library. And, you know, they say writing nowadays is 50% writing and 85% avoiding the Internet, you know, because you can, as you say, you can really get lost. But on the other hand, you can find stuff you weren't even knowing you were looking for.
That's exactly right.
And that's the fun part. But, yes, I do. And I read, you know, like I read all 16 of Alan Pinkerton's books before I read. He's a terrible writer, but a very interesting detective. But he was, you know, he had a bad reputation there toward the end, and he was trying to make himself look better. So of course he wrote all these books, and so I read every one of them. You know, you just really get into it, as you say. And sometimes you read a whole book. I read this whole thick book, like 500 pages, on how to make a watch and how to repair watches, and I think I used maybe two sentences out of the whole book, but they were valuable sentences, you know, and so that's what you have to do.
Well, I found, because I discovered I didn't know very much about Pinkertons, really, except the famous line from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, you know, who are those guys?
Who are those guys, yeah. <You know?
laughs> And I have been enjoying the series, the TV series that's filmed in Canada called The Pinkertons, and I just think that's just kind of fun TV and interesting stories. But I didn't really know much about them, so I just thought, well, what the heck, I'll just do a little digging on Pinkerton and... you know, they're still very much a very huge detective and security company today. But on their website, you know, you can click for history and learn all about all of these years, 1850 and up. And in the year 2000, they donated archives to the Library of Congress, including all their mugshot books and about 100 boxes of archival materials, including all of the casework, all the reports that existed.
And, you know, Alan started the mugshot thing, but he'd have all the sheriffs and marshals across the country send him newspaper clippings, and that's how he made this file. So he did all that.
So interesting. And when we were talking about that, you mentioned that a lot of files had been lost.
They had been lost. That's why you don't see too much about the women detectives, because they had the big, great, Chicago fire, and so they lost everything during that fire.
Yeah, because that's where their headquarters were.
That's right, exactly.
In Chicago. But one of the things that I found on the Pinkerton website was the original Pinkerton code. And Margaret's lady detectives, although so far, at least in the books, I don't see the code per se, but as they make decisions... We kind of ride along with them. We sort of see the story through their eyes, and we get to understand their thought process. And so they will make comments about their actions or what they're going to do next. And a lot of it has to do with following the Pinkerton code. So I thought it would be fun to share the Pinkerton code. Is that okay with you, Margaret?
Oh,
if
absolutely.
I share the Pinkerton,
absolutely.
So here is the basic Pinkerton code: accept no bribes. Never compromise with criminals. Partner with local law enforcement agencies. And these ladies always do.
Well, not always.
Well, eventually they go once they know the local law is clear.
And well, some of the sheriffs did not want to work with the Pinkertons, so there were some problems there.
Yeah. Refuse divorce cases or cases that initiate scandals. Turn down reward money. Never raise fees without the client's pre-knowledge, and keep clients apprised on an ongoing basis. And
that's exactly right. I do want to mention that Kate actually did save President-elect Lincoln's life. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. So the listeners would know. I'd like to just
Tell us.
Well, he was. There was going to be an assassination attempt. They found out about it, and they were going to happen on a train. And Kate actually wrapped him up in a stole, put him in a wheelchair, and passed him off as her invalid brother. So that's how they got him to Washington safely. And, you know, that's pretty interesting.
Now, how did their network uncover that this was going to happen?
Well, Kate was doing some research, and she found out. She was working on some sort of case, and they found out that there was a plan to assassinate Lincoln before he got to Washington. So it's kind of interesting that she did save his life.
It's very interesting.
And supposedly she stayed up all night while he slept on the train watching him. And supposedly that's when Alan came up with the slogan, "We never sleep,"
And we can attribute it to a woman.
Absolutely.
Women never sleep.
You don't, I know that.
Little naps.
Alan Pinkerton also was a security for the president during the Civil War.
Absolutely.
It was a precursor to the Secret Service.
Absolutely, which was just to do for counterfeit money originally was what their plan was, He's kind of an interesting man. He fell into it quite by accident. He actually had a Cooper company where they made barrels.
Barrels, right.
And when he was looking, he went in the woods to find staves for the barrels. He came across this counterfeiting group. They were in there. And so he got the sheriff involved, and they made a plan, and they caught him. And the sheriff was so impressed that he offered him a job. So it's interesting. He was, had no idea of going into detective work until by accident, actually.
Not bad for a Scottish immigrant.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And, he also, his Cooper business also was a part of the Underground Railroad. Which is kind of interesting too. So he was, he was very much against slavery.
Wow. Okay. Do you have a particular writing style?
Style. How do you mean that?
Oh, let me see. Golly, I don't know. I know I do. I mean, I make sure that everybody talks in a way that they talk.
Well, I see what you mean. Okay. Well, I think I write a lot of humor, and that's not something it just comes naturally. I mean, I don't plan to write humor or anything, and it was really funny. I was writing these contemporaries, which were quite dramatic, and my agent once said to me one day, she says, "Margaret, why don't you write a humorous historical?" Now, isn't that a strange thing? And I said, "Oh, okay." So I put together a proposal, gave it to her, and the next time I met her was at a conference, and she says, "I fell out of bed laughing last night," and I was offended because I thought she meant that in a bad way, And she says, no, it's hysterically funny." So that's kind of, isn't that funny? I don't have humor when I'm contemporary, but I do in historical. I don't know why that is.
maybe there's a lot to laugh at.
Yeah,
I
know.
I actually did one that's kind of clever. It's called Eastern Men. And it's just all these people from the East Coast trying to make it in the desert. And they had no clue. And just wandering around, just, getting eaten up by snakes and scorpions and spiders and Apaches.
But you have to be careful when you're writing historicals because, that's where your brain is. And I know my husband came home from the doctor one day, and I looked up at him from the typewriter, and I said, "What did the sheriff say?"
Well, I know I wrote a check not long ago, and the year was 1876 that I put on it, so...
Wow.
So that, that tells you where my mind is often
in
a totally different decade.
I know. And
century.
People think that I, sound like I'm 200 years old sometimes, That's pretty funny.
Your characters, as much as I would say that your writing is, it's engaging and entertaining, but they're also, these are fully developed characters. They have histories, and some of them have had heartbreak, and it's not, I don't want to leave an impression that somehow these are frivolous stories or comedy sort of characters, but they approach life typically with optimism, and even if the going is tough right then and there, there's a sense that they're going to come out okay. And they are all, you know, like real people tinged with tragedies in their lives or, you know, difficulties that's gotten them where they are today, single parents, whatever that might be, coming out of the Civil War, they're coming out of different situations, and yet you move them through this sort of adventure, this journey that they're on with, I think, a love for the characters that you create.
Well, my agent said that I write serious themes with humor, and, you know, I think that, you know, I think people, they want more than just, you know, they want to feel, they want to go through the emotions, and that's why readers read, is for the emotions. And I think if you could make them cry or make them laugh, you know, you're doing what you should be doing.
Well, you're doing your job, for sure.
Yeah, that's exactly right, you know. And so that's what...
Well, and taking something that's set in a different time period, but having a reader still somehow feel that it can be relevant in their own life, even
Absolutely.
As they maybe escape to another time, but be able to still sense that these are people dealing with the same things that we may be dealing in with our own life today.
Well, people are people. It doesn't matter. And, you know, the 1800s, I'm always telling my husband this, and he looks at me kind of funny, but, you know, the 1800s, if you ever studied that, everything that's going on then is going on now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have the technology and everything, but so did they. I mean, they had the internet, which was called the telegraph. And you know, they had when the train came in, that changed everything. They had everything that we have today, and it's kind of interesting. I find it very interesting anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Where can we find your books?
Well, right now, there are some of them at Walmart, which my husband tells me today. But, of course, they're online, you know, Amazon, the usual, Barnes & Noble. But, yeah, and wherever you can find a bookstore.
Anymore.
Well, you have a great website. Let's give that address again. You also have a Facebook page. Let's do your website address again.
All right, it's Margaret-Brownlee, LEY.com.
And then you have a Facebook page, Margaret Brownlee Books.
Books, right.
And you also contribute to a blog,
Petticoats and Pistols.
So fun.
No. And also, Heroes, Heroines, and History. I do that once a month, too. Yes, so that's fun, too.
And Margaret, I would encourage our listeners to check her out and then sign up for her newsletters, because she always is running contests to enter to win a free book, and she lets you know where she's going to be doing an author appearance.
And recipes.
And
my son-in-law.
Little videos. There's a great one on stagecoach etiquette. And at holiday time, she always writes about holiday traditions in the West and how traditions get started, and just really, really fun. Really fun. So fun to have you with us today.
It's just so much fun being here. I just love this show. It's great.
That's like we just try to make it like just a bunch of friends sitting around talking.
Well, I think that's great.
We just happen to go out to the entire world because it's internet-based. Of course, all of our fan are listening.
Yes, we need everyone's help to get it out to the world.
Our Facebook page is doing rather well.
Great.
Yeah.
And we have some good people coming on. Like I said, we have Eric Heisner and Al Bringus next week. And then we have some other folks coming in. And actually, Bobby's actually going to interview me on July 16th.
Oh, I
So Jim will be running the board, but he'll be our guest.
That's going to be fun.
You better ask him more.
She hasn't interviewed me in a while.
And if you want to know who's coming up on the Writer's Block, on our Facebook page, under About is where I've been posting the schedule. And you'll see Margaret's name there, and then it goes right, you click See More, and it goes right down through July 30th when we have Henry Park. So we'll update that weekly as we book our next guests.
As we add writers. Mm-hmm. And we have had quite a few that have written to us and requested information on how to get on the show, so.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. It's a lot of fun to sit here for an 50 minutes on on a Thursday night and just chat with old friends.
Oh, it's great. It's fun. It really is.
And it's kind of neat looking across the room, and there's Jim over there holding up the wall. seems to be what he comes for.
We don't like, Jim doesn't want to miss out on anything.
I don't blame him. So we have about a minute left. Is there anything that you would like to put out for Out West?
Let's see. The next Out West concert is June 25th, and we have four phenomenal performers coming in from Fort Worth, Devin Dawson and The Outlaw. They go by Miss Devin and The Outlaw. Kristen Harris, Western Music Association's Female Performer of the Year 2014, and an amazing fiddler, Brooke Wallace. And if you love Western swing, if you're looking for just a great time of foot tapping, smiling, engaging music, then you'll want to give us a call at Out West for ticket information, and that's 661-255-7087, or go to our store's website, scvoutwest.com, and there you can shop our entire store as well as learn about all of the upcoming events that we're involved with. And that's that on Out West.
Okay, and this has been the Writer's Block on LATalkRadio.com. I'm Jim Christina with my co-host Bobby Bell, and we're going to tell you good evening. Oh. And I can't hit my thing.